Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, I saw a great headline earlier this morning from Breitbart News. Not just a great headline. There's always good headlines. There's always creative, fancy headlines. But this is not just a great headline. This is great news. And what are we? Yeah, 10 days. 10 days for those of you that are counting the days until Donald J. Trump is sworn back in as president of the United States. Here you go. This is a Breitbart News exclusive. Mike Waltz to clean out the deep staters from the National Security Council. We're taking resignations at 12:01 on January 20th. What a great story. The author of that report, Matthew Boyle, Breitbart News, now with us here on Montana Talks. Matthew, great to have you back on the show. Yeah, this is great news.
Yeah, really exciting stuff. So I spoke to Mr. Waltz. He's still currently a congressman from Florida, but will be the national security advisor for President Trump upon his return to the White House. And the big takeaway from the news in this one, and there's a bunch of other stuff that he talked about in this interview, but the biggest thing is on January 20th, every single detailee to the National Security Council from the various intelligence agencies and government departments and whatnot are all being sent back. They're all being told to get out of the White House, and the White House under Trump is going to bring in all new ones. So for people who don't understand how the National Security Council works, basically what happens is that in the White House, there's a National Security Council. It's been that way since Harry Truman was the president in 1947. And overseeing it is the National Security Advisor. That's Mike Waltz. Underneath him, there are several other political appointees. And then there are, meetings of the cabinet, the relevant cabinet positions as well. That meet with the National Security Council. But underneath the political leadership of the National Security Council, there are career intelligence, law enforcement, military folks who are detailed from the various agencies, from the FBI, from the NSA, the CIA, the Pentagon, the et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, Justice Department, DEA, right? Like all of these different places, State Department, will detail career officials to the National Security Council, and they're there to serve as a conduit back and forth between the White House and their respective agencies and departments, and also to help quickly coordinate and execute the president's agenda. What we saw in the president's first term, and President Trump's first term, was some of these people that were detailees to the National Security Council were pretty globalist folks, right? Like they were very much against President Trump's agenda. In fact, one of them, Alex Vindman, led to the whole effort to impeach Trump the first time.
Yeah, that's right. It's turned into this massive bureaucracy. It's turned into this massive deep state bureaucracy that leaks like a sieve. They can't keep our national secrets secret. They undermined the president of the United States with left-wing political operatives. So Mike Waltz wants to clean house. Matt Boyle, hold that thought. Back right after this quick break. Stand by.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With sunny skies early on, followed by some increasing clouds later on in the day today. High temperature readings will stay in the upper 30s to around 40 degrees. As we head into tonight, we're going to see cloudy skies. Along with that, some chances for rain and snow showers. Turning over to snow showers overnight. 1 to 3 inches possible in Bozeman, lesser amounts in the Billings area. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
It's January 10th, and this is your Fox Daily Snapshot. It's Save the Eagles Day. As the symbol of our country, there are more than 70 species of the majestic bird around the world, with some of them on the endangered species list. The bald eagle was removed from the endangered species list in 2007 due to conservation efforts. However, loss of habitat, poaching, and other factors continue to threaten eagle populations globally. Also on this date, in 49 BC, Julius Caesar defied the Roman Senate and crossed the Rubicon, sparking a civil war which would eventually lead to him being appointed dictator for life. Thomas Paine published Common Sense in 1776. The pamphlet openly called for independence from England. And if it's your birthday today, you share it with former heavyweight boxing champ and Foreman Grill pitchman George Foreman, born in 1949, and rock legend Pat Benatar, born in 1953. I'm Tushar Saxena, and that's your Fox Daily Snapshot.
Hey, talking about these fires down in Southern California, Montana's U.S. Senator Tim Sheehy, newly sworn in senator. He's a Navy SEAL veteran. He's also an aerial firefighter. He weighed in with some incredible interviews on Laura Ingraham's show on Fox News. Plus, he was on with Mark Levin right here on this radio station. If you missed either of those interviews, check out our Montana Talks podcast. And we had some of the highlights for you both in the 6 o'clock and the 8 o'clock hours of the show. Full audio on the Montana Talks app.
All right.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, back to it here with Matt Boyle. Matt Boyle is the Washington Bureau Chief for Breitbart News, and I've enjoyed reading his reports and listening to him on Breitbart News on the radio over the years. But Matt, I think our listeners are a little more up to speed on a story like this. But when Mike Waltz, the Green Beret Florida congressman who soon will be President Trump's national security advisor, when he comes in and he starts cleaning out the deep staters from the NSC, Montana has the highest number of veterans per capita all across the country. So we kind of get it, right? You know, many of us had security clearances. I had a top secret clearance myself. And I'm just amazed at how many people get these things and then how many different layers they're briefing the same old thing and the same old thing. But to your story here is that a lot of people don't realize what a massive bureaucracy, the hundreds and hundreds of people that work at the National Security Council. And then we wonder why our nation can't keep secrets and why we have these leakers and these backstabbers and these deep staters that are not just undermining the President Donald J. Trump in the past, but are undermining our own country. That's why this story is so significant.
Yeah, look, and I think that across the board, the establishment media is pretty upset about this because all their sources are getting sent back to their out of the White House. But that being said, the fact is that look, you need to have a strong National Security Council, right? So there's a balancing act here. At the same time, what we're getting rid of, he's going to be getting rid of all of these people coming in on January 20th. They need to fill the places with, there are good people who work throughout our national security and intelligence apparatus, right? Like, what we need to do is we need to find those good people and then bring those good people in so that way the president's agenda actually gets executed flawlessly and without delay and quickly. And that's one of the other things that Mike Waltz told me is that he's asked everybody in their various issue portfolios to lay out a set of goals that they want to accomplish inside of 4 years and then truncate that timeline to 2 years and then again to 1 year, right? Like, and then everything is going to be outcome oriented is his words, right? Like outcome oriented. So you're going to see, how you saw it in the first term with Trump. And it really took Trump a couple years, I would say, to really get the swing of things as the president the first time. Because he was really new to Washington. And I've talked with the president about this a bunch of times, is that one of the things he says is that, you know, he'd never really been to Washington before he got elected to the White House in 2016. He'd never really stayed overnight, right? Like, he'd been there, flown in and out a few times. Now he knows things much better than he did the first time. And that's another thing that Waltz told me is that Trump kind of enters this with an advantage that other presidents in the modern era have not had. He's not even like he's certainly not a year one president, and he's almost like not even like a year 5 president. It's like he's a year 8 or 9 president, is what Mike Waltz said. Because, you know, during the Biden presidency, it's not like Trump checked out. He's been engaged on all these issues. He's been trying to figure out solutions to these things and how he's going to solve this stuff. And so that experience that Trump has when he's coming back to the White House, I think is going to you're going to see a lot of action very quickly as soon as President Trump is inaugurated, especially in the national security space, especially in the foreign policy space. And then one of the other big things that that Walt said in this interview is that there's going to be quite clearly, and you see this from the president already right now, the president-elect, before the inauguration, is that there's going to be a massive focus on the Western Hemisphere, right? Like, so things like the Panama Canal, things like Mexico and Canada, things like Greenland, and beyond that, you know, dealing with South America. Our foreign policy establishment's been so obsessed with Russia and whatnot that they've forgotten about our own backyard. Sure. Yeah, the Russians are a threat and so on and so forth, and so are the Chinese. We need to be very focused on China, by the way. China is the greatest national security threat to the United States. We've never had anything like this, and we never will again. They are the greatest threat that we've ever faced. And frankly, our foreign policy establishment's been so obsessed with Russia, they forget about China. But the Western Hemisphere always falls by the wayside. And you're going to see a clear effort by Trump and the Trump administration with Secretary Rubio coming in, Secretary of State, with Mike Waltz as the National Security Advisor, with President Trump and J.D. Vance in the White House. You're going to see a big focus on the Western Hemisphere.
No, and that's so important. Even the critics of the war in Iraq and Afghanistan that went on way too long, nation-building exercise, they'd say, look, it took our eye off the ball of our own backyard and the WHIM, the Western Hemisphere. Yeah, great comments all around here by Matt Boyle, the Washington Bureau Chief for Breitbart News. Matt, we got just only about a minute to go before our next hard break, but you spent some time in Montana covering the 2024 elections. What a monumental victory with Senator Tim Sheehy now in place in Washington.
Yeah, I spent a day with Senator Gaines out at his home in the Bozeman area, and we did a big video special with him, and we rolled several that out over the course of several months in the lead up to the election. Monumental victory there. And again, we would not be where we are today as a movement without Montana. Montana is super important, not just with Sheehy's election, and Sheehy's proving to be a mover and shaker already on Capitol Hill and in Washington and the national political scene. But we're also seeing the work that Senator Gaines did as chairman of the NRSC was critical to Republicans retaking the majority in the U.S.
So. That's right. I think a lot of people don't realize how much his work really was instrumental, along with, of course, President Trump. Senator Gaines' efforts were huge. We may not have won as many races as we ended up winning in the Senate. Matt Boyle, great to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for your time and your great reporting as always.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
When is your vehicle a threat to the community? Generally when it hits something or somebody. That's why we have licenses to drive, rules on how to drive, and consequences for those who don't obey them. There are also plenty of rules and regulations about the vehicles themselves, covering everything from headlights to airbags. But vehicle height has mostly escaped that regulation, and since 78% of new passenger vehicles these days were light trucks rather than cars, that height has been increasing, and the number of pedestrian deaths caused by collisions has been increasing as well. A new study gives strong evidence that the two trends are not a coincidence. The study looked at front-end height specifically for 3,400 crashes and estimated the likelihood of fatality went up by 22% for every 10-centimeter increase in front-end height. It's easy to understand why, both from reduced visibility for the driver and the higher point of contact with the pedestrian who struck. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
Fox on Football. I'm Jared Max. After 544 regular season games, it's time for the NFL playoffs. The two-time reigning champion Chiefs have the inside track to return to the Super Bowl for a fifth time in 6 years. Kansas City earned a first-round playoff bye and home field advantage through the AFC playoffs. Same story for the Detroit Lions in the NFC. If Minnesota wins its wild card game Monday night versus the Rams, the Vikings would return to Detroit to play the Lions for a second time in 3 weeks. First three this weekend in the AFC, starting with the Texans home against the Chargers Saturday afternoon. Then an AFC North matchup between the Steelers and heavily favored Ravens in Baltimore. Sunday, the Bills a big favorite at home against the Broncos. Then in the NFC, 4:30 Eastern time on Fox TV, the Eagles host the Packers. Sunday night, it'll be the Buccaneers home against the Commanders. Since the NFL added wildcard teams to the playoffs in 1980, seven have won the Super Bowl. Jared Max, Fox News.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
This week, I'm in Orlando, Florida at the Potato Expo, the nation's largest potato industry event, which brings growers, processors, and innovators together to help tackle the challenges facing the industry while learning about new innovations along the way. And of course, Montana is a top seed potato producing state. And while here in Orlando, I caught up with Ronan Montana's Susan Lake with Lake Farms.
I'll tell you, Ed, what I really like is that we're seeing people from that we know in the industry. It's amazing how many people have collected here and how much interaction that you can have. And just looking at trade, looking at innovation, I'm excited to be here.
From the educational speakers to trade show exhibitors, Susan says it's all a learning experience.
Well, I like the tractors, but the irrigation was the big one that really jumped out at me because I'm always thinking about water. And like I said, with our irrigation project on the reservation and worrying about how much water there's going to be, I think water's huge. I think the fertilizers piece is huge. There's new innovative things.
Now, I also need to congratulate Susan and Jack Lake on recently being named the Ronan Chamber of Commerce Ag Producers of the Year. So congrats to the Lake family from Ronan on that honor. And it was great catching up with them here in Orlando. I'm Wayne Nordlund reporting from Potato Expo.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. This is where Montana talks.
Ah, yes, Lane Nordlund, Mr. Potato Man. Another great report as always, Lane Nordlund. Loves them potatoes, loves them seed producers as well, and we love the reporting. That's good stuff. Big part of the Gallatin Valley economy in particular, Lake County, of course. Good stuff. All right, let's see. You know, that conversation there with Matt Boyle from Breitbart News reminded me of a couple of topics I want to get to here this morning. But anything that come to mind for you? Or do you got something you want to talk about? I know we had somebody called in towards the end of the 6 o'clock hour, but that's when we had our, you know, that's when we're doing our legislative update here every day throughout the legislative session. So if you want to, but if you want to call in now, if you tried to call in then and you want to call in now, give us a call 406-294-0970. But you know, a couple of things that Matt Boyle talked about there, you know, talking about how, look, he's just a freshman senator. He's the new guy. He's the FNG. He's the new guy here. He's only been sworn in for just under a week, but yet Montana's U.S. Senator Tim Sheehy is already a mover and a shaker on Capitol Hill. And, of course, here's why. It's because the guy's the real deal with a real background and with real experiences. He's not just some community organizer, political hack who got propped up into some position. The guy served his country in the military. The guy started a business, grew a business, led a business. He's an aerial firefighter himself. So, of course, when it comes to this major topic of wildfires in America, not just in California but across the country, he's not just a big voice because he's a senator. He's a big voice because now he's a senator who's actually got some background in this stuff, who actually knows what he's talking about in this stuff. I don't know if you guys saw this in the news. I'm sure you probably did. Remember last year during the campaign when the Laken Riley Act came up for a vote in the United States Senate? Flip-flop, flat-top. That was the moniker for the liberal Senator John Tester. Now, I need to go back and look at some of the tweets from, what was it, 9 months ago? Let's see, when did we have Stephen Miller on the program with us? It was, I think it was about 9 months ago, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, John Tester voted against the Laken Riley Act. What is the Laken Riley Act? I've got a report here that'll sum it up and tell you the news on that front. But John Tester, you know, Lakin Riley was the young Georgia college student who was sexually assaulted and murdered by an illegal alien in Georgia. And so the Lakin Riley Act, the Republicans were supporting the Lakin Riley Act. The Democrats were not supporting it because they don't want to deport even criminal illegal aliens who have committed additional crimes on top of the crime of breaking into this country illegally. And so the Democrats filibustered. They blocked the Lakin Riley Act. If I'm not mistaken, John Tester was getting called out for voting against the Lakin Riley Act. And if I'm not mistaken, I think there were some media news outlets who claimed, oh, no, he didn't vote against the Lakin Riley Act. Either that or they just kind of ignored the story or they downplayed the story. Oh, well, this was a procedural motion. This was unrelated to the legislation. You know, they covered for the guy. They covered for the guy, covering for the guy who murdered this young Georgia college student. And so many other, you know, horrific crimes committed by illegal aliens. Well, then, like, what was it, a month or two later, after getting all this pressure, despite being covered for by the Montana media, John Tester, in classic flip-flop, flat-top fashion, flip-flopped on the Lakin Riley Act. Oh, I'm going to co-sponsor the Lakin Riley Act. And then the big, bad, powerful senator, look at me, I'm a committee chairman. Look at how powerful I am. That's why you need to vote for me. I'm a powerful committee chairman. What happened with the Lakin Riley Act? It went nowhere last year. Nowhere. And yet, here we are. It hasn't even been a full week since Senator Tim Sheehy was sworn into the United States Senate. And by golly, the Lakin Riley Act is moving forward.
The Lakin Riley Act would make it federal law to detain illegal aliens who commit crimes like burglary and theft for immigration authorities so they can be deported. Riley, who was a nursing student in Georgia, was found murdered last year by an illegal alien who'd been allowed to remain in the country after shoplifting. The bill was reintroduced into the new Congress by Alabama Republican Katie Britt.
You start hearing stories like Lakin Riley, like Rachel Moran, like Jocelyn Nungery. One story is one too many, but they have become countless and way too consistent.
The Senate voted 84-9 to open up debate on the act. Senate Majority Leader John Thune said they are not open to political showmanship meant to get in the way of making this act law. Jessica Rosenthal, Fox News.
Yeah, so basically, you know, again, I don't really need to mention John Tester's name. It's not about him. It's not about the history. It's about the ongoing story of the fake news media covering for the Democrats. It's about the ongoing story about these fake, phony Democrats claiming to support something, claiming that they're going to do A, B, C, or D, or E, when the entire time, you know it's BS, you know they're doing everything to... here. Yeah, what about this story, huh? I saw Jeff Esman, former state Senate Majority Leader, was also making some good points on X over the past couple of days as well. Well, look at that. Look at that. Here the Democrats stood united in opposition to the Lakin Riley Act. This phony flip-flop flat-top from Montana claimed to support the Lakin Riley Act, and then it never went anywhere. But golly, that's right, Gomer, golly, here we go. John Tester is out of the way. In the first week he's in office, the Lakin Riley Act, that Senator Tim Sheehy's in office, the Lakin Riley Act moves forward. Kat is calling in from Eastern Montana, and Kat, you did such a great job hammering flip-flop, flat-top on this topic and many others. Yeah, your thoughts.
Well, good morning, Aaron, and good morning, Montana. I really, really used the Lakin Riley Act because how could a senior senator of 18 years, after leaving the border open and seeing all the carnage, how could he, dare he vote against detaining and deporting violent criminals? It was just beyond my comprehension. So I hammered him, and I hammered him hard, and I hope it helped to open people's eyes to exactly what John Tester stood for. I am so happy that Tim Sheehy is leading by example, being a mover and a shaker, because maybe that's what they need in D.C. They need somebody to watch young, getting things done, getting the whole agenda of Donald Trump, just hammering it through. And I really hope that he is successful. It sounds like he's on his way. And I am so pleased and so thankful to God that we retired John Tester. Thank you for helping us, Montana. We did it. I hope you have a wonderful day, Aaron. And I'll see you on X.
Hey, all right. Yeah, no, yeah, wonderful. Happy Freedom Friday to you. And thanks for all your efforts. And thanks for calling in. Yeah, it's, but again, the story continues here. The story is going to continue because now the Democrats, now they've realized the folly of their ways. And so that's why now Senate Democrats are like, okay, yeah, we're not listening to John Tester and all this, you know, radical transgender agenda stuff. And so, well, they'll probably still push forward on that stuff. But so they're like, okay, now we need to pull back. We need to pretend to be moderate once again. We need to pretend to moderate our positions so that we can try to rebuild what we burned down this past year. This is the Democrats' line of thinking. But the story continues of the phoniness and the fakeness of the Democrats. The story continues of the phoniness and the fakeness of so many in the media that do nothing but cover for Democrats like they did for John Tester. You watch over the next... Heck, it could be over the next 48 hours. You watch as they prop up Zoe Zephyr, the radical transgender lawmaker who thinks that men should go into your daughter's bathroom, who thinks that men should take away your daughter's opportunity in sports, who thinks that men should be able to go into your daughter's locker room and watch her undress. You watch how they prop up Zoe Zephyr when House Bill 121 comes up in Montana.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, I've actually got the audio. You guys know Stephen Miller. Stephen Miller will be President Trump's deputy, deputy chief of staff or deputy policy director, something to that effect. He's been very close with President Trump. If you were at the Metra in Billings, Montana, for example, in 2016, when Donald Trump, before he was ever President Trump, when he did a rally in Billings, Montana, Stephen Miller was there addressing the crowd. So he's been with President Trump since day one, especially talking about the urgency on our southern border. And so he'll be with President Trump on day one once again, when he now becomes the 47th president of the United States here in about 10 days. But Stephen Miller came back to Montana a few times, and Stephen Miller went after John Tester for voting against the Laken-Riley Act. And we had audio on the show. He actually joined me on the show a couple of different times. So I thought I might, you know, it's only 90 seconds long. Maybe I'd re-air that audio for you. So we'll see. We got so much to talk about here this morning. But let's go into the phone lines. We've got Tom in Bozeman next up on the phone lines. Tom, what's going on? Thanks for the call.
How's it going this morning?
Hey, good.
I'm on the radio.
Yes, you are.
Hey, I heard you guys were talking. I heard you guys were talking about the logging project up here this morning.
Yeah.
Well, we're up here logging, so how can I help you?
Well, that's great. That's what we want to see.
Well, someone's got to do it. It might as well be us.
Yeah. Well, tell us why you're there, how important it is that you're there.
Well, we believe in sustainable forestry and clean water, and we all like to live in a wood house, and we want to see good paying jobs in Montana and a good future for this state. So that's why we're here.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Tom, how long have you been in the business?
It'll be 16 years in May.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, can you tell us, so you must not have missed it. Somebody just must have told you, hey, they were talking about logging outside of Bozeman and how important it is to protect the watershed there. So it sounds like you didn't get a chance to hear my comments last hour. We've been talking about, and there's others who are maybe just getting rolling that maybe didn't hear it either. But so last hour I was talking about California and the lack of water and the lack of responsible land management. And I was making the point that these radical environmental groups will file lawsuits to block these fuel reduction efforts. And I made the point how you even had radical environmental groups in the Bozeman area speak out against the very project that you're working on right now. And I made the point how
if they would have stopped that project, it would have threatened the entire water supply for the city of Bozeman. And so if we don't watch out, and if they keep feeding these animals in the environmental movement, then eventually that animal is going to turn around and bite them. And that's what California is seeing right now. So anyway, that's what we were talking about in the 6 o'clock hour of the show.
Well, we couldn't agree more. We don't think that environmentalism should be a full-time, high-paying job for these people and these attorneys. It should come out of the good of someone's heart. And I'd also argue that nobody loves the woods more than, you know, people that work in the woods and see the sustainability and the beauty of the forest and the wildlife. And, I mean, just to add to your comments, too, I mean, we are pretty upset with how everything went down in Sheridan, Wyoming, too. So, you know, we're hopeful that they can figure out a fix and a solution for their forest that burned. I want to say it was well over 70,000 acres, and that's going to affect their watershed, too.
Yeah, people don't understand how, hey, if you have a fire burn through an area and you get your water in a reservoir that's in that area, how much all of that the damage that is caused by that fire can damage your water supply, and you would be left out without clean drinking water.
Correct, yeah. As the fire burns intensely, all that organic material can melt into the soil, and the term is hydrophobic. So then the soil will not absorb water until further management is made and the soil is broken up so that they can, again, absorb water. So then you run the risk of landslides, trees, sediment, water, rocks, everything going into the water supply that realistically the infrastructure is probably not set up to deal with.
Yeah. Now, you say you're up there working right now. And what's the temperature up there right now? How early did you get up and going? Because, you know, here we are in this, I've got a nice cup of coffee and I'm in this air, you know, this perfect air temperature studio. And we got real folks out there putting in the real work this morning. How cold was it when you showed up this morning?
It's actually a little bit warmer up here this morning. It's pretty nice. The little inversion, it's about 20 degrees up here.
Oh, man. That's like a good football game weather there. Yeah, no. Well, this is so cool because, you know, as I was talking about Los Angeles and how they didn't have water and how they spilled the water into the ocean and then they don't do the proper land management, we're doing more better land management projects here in Montana with, you know, what the governor's doing, what the DNRC is doing, et cetera. The governor described it, even though they doubled the fuel reduction efforts his first year in office, he's like, this is like taking a bucket out of the ocean with the amount of fuels reduction work that needs to be done really all across the state, all across the country. And so, but you guys are working on that right now. But, you know, as I talked about, you know, how the environmentalists were opposing the fuel reduction effort that you're working on to save the water supply, I was thinking, I was like, man, I should go follow up and see where we're at with that project. And then, boom, here we go. We get a nice surprise phone call from you. So where are we at? How far along are you? And which company's got the contract up there again?
We're logging under Sun Mountain Lumber right now.
That's right.
We're contract loggers. Our company's called Big Twig. And, you know, I just want to add something that, you know, it's important to understand there's many, many tools that we have to manage the forest, and logging is obviously one of them. And the important thing to realize is that the general public and the Forest Service stands to make money off of what we're doing right now because we're actually paying for the woods. So that's how we can get larger scale fuel reduction projects done. So there are other forms of ground raising, hand thinning, piling, slashing, masticating, and some burning too. But these are all important tools for forest management. But if we want to get these large scale projects done, logging is realistically the best vector to get some of this large acreage stuff done because the government is not paying for this work.
That's a great point.
Paying on the timber sale.
You're paying them for the timber that you get while you're actually doing the job for them to clean up our forest. You said something earlier, too, which is such an important point to highlight here. My grandma up in Glasgow, Montana, she would always say, you know, when because Earth Day started to be a thing when I was a kid back in the 80s, you know, and
right. She
would always kind of just scoff at this Earth Day thing and these people that called themselves environmentalists. She would always say, you know, it's our farmers and ranchers that are the ones that truly care for the environment. And, you know, our timber industry workers, our loggers, people like you, you are the farmers of our forests. You are the ones that truly care about our forests. That's an important point to underline.
Well, I appreciate hearing that, too. And, you know, we also do road maintenance during projects, after projects. And then furthermore, as these timber sales get wrapped up, the Forest Service has that money from the timber sales to invest either into their own payroll or, let's say, invasive or noxious weed management or handwork that needs to be done on these projects, too. So it's another vector to get more projects done to benefit the forest, too. Because, like I said, logging is an important tool. It is not the only tool, but it is an important and large tool in forest.
So Big Twig is the company that's cutting for Sun Mountain. I love that name, Big Twig, for a logging company. That's awesome. All right. Well, Tom, anything else you want to tell folks? Thanks for calling in from the Bozeman area, I should say, if you're up in the hills right now. But, man, what a nice, awesome surprise phone call this morning. Anything else you want to tell people across Montana?
Hey, I appreciate your time. I appreciate everybody listening. And if we can be a further resource for yourself or any kind of education as far as that type of stuff goes, give me a ring anytime.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. We could do a more formal kind of update on this project and many others, and then the continued ongoing needs that are needed really all across the state and all across this country to clean up our forests. It's because it's not just important for the landscape. It's not just important for water supply. It's important for wildlife as well, as one of our callers in the 6 o'clock hour pointed out. That, you know, you get out there and you try to go hunting, and it's like, you know, why do you think all the wildlife are on private land oftentimes? Why aren't they on the public land? Well, they're on the managed land because it's better than the mismanaged or the unmanaged land. So think about it from that standpoint. So maybe if we better managed our, you know, government lands, federal lands in particular, we would have better hunting opportunities, better wildlife, all the above. Anyway, what a great surprise phone call there from Tom in Bozeman. Man, you couldn't have planned a better call than that one right there. Such a nice surprise phone call. All as a result of something we ended up talking about an hour ago, and that prompted him, somebody to call him to say, hey, you should call into this show right now. How cool is that? That's why I love the fact that we have phone lines open, that anybody can call into this show. Yeah, it gets a little crazy sometimes. And then, but you get a ton of those golden nuggets, just like what we just got right there. Phone lines are open right now, by the way, 406-294-0970, or you can message us on the Montana Talks app.
Shopping is hard.
I can never find anything in my size.
I don't even know my size.
I buy my clothes the same place I buy my groceries.
There's a better way. Make it easy with Stitch Fix. Just share your size, style, budget, and done. Your personal stylist sends pieces picked just for you.
That was easy.
Stitch Fix, online personal styling for everyone. Free shipping and returns. No subscription required. Get started today at stitchfix.com.
Fox News commentary.
Why the heck was L.A. Mayor Karen Bass in Ghana instead of L.A. when the fires broke out? I'm Tommy Lahren. More next.
The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday. Fox Business reporters, anchors, and hosts will bring you beneath the stock market speculation and boardroom drama to tell you about the biggest business stories of today. Whether you're on Main Street or Wall Street, Fox Business is invested in you.
Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Fires are destroying Southern California, and the footage is absolutely gut-wrenching. People, rich, poor, young, and old, have lost everything, and I can't imagine how devastated they must feel. And while now is not the time for politicking, it really was hard to look past how utterly inappropriate, tone-deaf, and ridiculous it was that L.A. Mayor Karen Bass was in Ghana as the fires burned. And not just in Ghana, on a taxpayer-funded trip to Ghana to celebrate a presidential inauguration. She's back now, and not a moment too soon, but, why the heck are taxpayers footing the bill for that in the first place? I get it. The supposed diplomatic trip was pre-planned, and she didn't know there would be an outbreak of wildfires. But that brings me back to my original point. Why was she in Ghana in the first place? California is run by fools. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at Outkick.com.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With sunny skies early on, followed by some increasing clouds later on in the day today. High temperature readings will stay in the upper 30s to around 40 degrees. As we head into tonight, we're going to see cloudy skies. Along with that, some chances for rain and snow showers. Turn it over to snow showers overnight. 1 to 3 inches possible in Bozeman, lesser amounts in the Billings area. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
Adopt U.S. Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hey, you got to hear our conversation with Cascade County Sheriff Jesse Slaughter talking about how the
last year with promo code CLAY terms apply.
Brought to you from the Montana Hot Spring Spas and Saunas Live Well, Feel Better Studio.
This is where Montana talks.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Oh, man, we still have a whole bunch of ground to cover. Still a whole lot of topics to cover here this morning. Thankfully, we've got over 2 hours to go here on the show, so we're still going to run out of time, though. We're still going to run out of time before we get to it all. Let's see. Yeah, we're going to have a lot of open phones time coming up in the 8 o'clock hour and the 9 o'clock hour of the show, and then we'll sneak in a couple of interviews as well. But, yeah, phone lines are open right now. What a great phone call from Tom. Tom the Big Twig Logger, that's what I'm going to call him. Tom the Big Twig Logger calling us from the logging site in the mountains this morning. That was so cool. Another great caller on the phone lines right now. We heard from him yesterday in the 8 o'clock hour. Fred from the Flathead is actually in California. He's been in California this week helping to fight these fires, part of that effort overall. Anyway, Fred, thanks for calling back in. What's your thoughts this morning?
I just wanted to weigh in on the water supply issue. It is true that California does waste a lot of water, sending in the state water project from the major streams and reservoirs are slow to fill, and the Delta smell, and everything that you've been saying is true. Again, this is just me kind of listening to the news reports about the lack of water supply, in particular as it relates to the Palisades fire. That water supply is Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, and they do have their own aqueduct that goes up into the Eastern Sierra. So in this case, I doubt that it was a lack of available water in their system. What I'm guessing is what happened, this is just a guess, but it's very plausible based on experience, is that in these areas you have the gravity system to give you gravity, to give you water pressure in your at your faucet and, you know, your domestic supply, in addition to the fire hydrants. And, they have these large tanks, and I think the media has been saying there's multiple tanks. I think 3 million gallons distributed between three tanks at the top of these mountains. Well, when you send more than 100 fire engines into the hills in the first couple of hours, and each of those engines can flow, you know, thousands of gallons per minute, but even just a modest attack would be 1,000 gallons a minute. You can see even just 20, 30 engines flowing 1,000 gallons a minute, you're going to run out of supply. So
you're going to run out of pressure. Yeah, it may just be that this is so massive, the system was overwhelmed. I heard
it's designed, just one more thing, the system's designed to maybe have a couple of house fires up there and keep the toilets flushing, but there may have been mismanagement in refilling the tanks, but the tanks maybe take days to refill, whereas you could drain those tanks rather quickly. So that's just one explanation. So,
well, and then apparently they weren't doing a good job of testing the fire hydrants on the annual basis,
yeah,
like they're supposed to.
We heard all that could be true.
Yeah, all of this will come out in some sort of an after-action review. I heard on Fox and Friends, this was the question I wanted to throw to you, Fred. On Fox and Friends earlier this morning, apparently Joe Biden claimed that, well, the reason they didn't have water pressure in the fire hydrants is because they shut off the power because the power companies didn't want, you know, the power lines to fuel more fires. That doesn't seem to make sense to me, because you would have an emergency plan for how do we keep powering the fire hydrants even if we have to shut down the rest of the power lines, right? I just don't see why.
Yeah, one would hope so. Yeah,
you would think, right?
If those tanks on top of those mountains are filled with pumps, are bringing water from the rest of their system, they're you know, large size reservoirs in their systems, you would hope that those pumps would have backup power supply. But, you know, that's just a guess. So he may be right, but if so, then that says more that should be investigated.
Well, especially when... Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Well, my main point was, I agree, this is great that the issue focuses on the large picture of water management and reservoirs and water use in California and environmental policy, but in this case, it might be as simple as, hey, they just drained the water that was available and it might take days to refill those tanks.
Could be. The only challenge with any of this is the fact that they have been warned repeatedly. They've known that eventually the big one like this was coming because they've had some pretty big ones before and yet still apparently unprepared.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
When is your vehicle a threat to the community? Generally when it hits something or somebody. That's why we have licenses to drive, rules on how to drive, and consequences for those who don't obey them. There are also plenty of rules and regulations about the vehicles themselves, covering everything from headlights to airbags. But vehicle height has mostly escaped that regulation, and since 78% of new passenger vehicles these days were light trucks rather than cars, that height has been increasing, and the number of pedestrian deaths caused by collisions has been increasing as well. A new study gives strong evidence that the two trends are not a coincidence. The study looked at front-end height specifically with 3,400 crashes and estimated the likelihood of fatality went up by 22% for every 10-centimeter increase in front-end height. It's easy to understand why, both from reduced visibility for the driver and the higher point of contact with the pedestrian who struck. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.